Three excellent interviews, two great hours, and now a third hour. And it's an open phone hour. 1-800-636-8686. This program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, you have your phone number. If you'd rather try me on Twitter, that works. You can also email us directly at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveitake.com. Whatever you want to talk about. It's an open phone hour. Whatever you want to talk about. I've already talked about Antonio Brown. We talked NFL with JLC. We talked Charger football with head coach Anthony Lynn. We talked Syracuse football with Dino Babers, who was amazing. The thing we have not talked about, and it's kind of hard for me to imagine that as great as that was, I made it all the way into hour number three without breaking this down, but I want to talk UFC 241 because almost nothing in life, this life, ever lives up to the hype, not in sports, not anywhere, except UFC 241 in Anaheim. Absolutely lived up to all the advance hype. That was a great event, a great card. I don't think anybody could say that they threw down for that and did not get a great ROI. And not because Stipe Miocic pulled off an amazing win over Daniel Cormier to reclaim the heavyweight belt. That was great. But I'm not saying the event was great because of that. I mean, in part. But mostly because of the return of one Nate Diaz. No, check that. Nathan Donald Diaz. Let's get into Nate Diaz for a moment. Do you know how rare and unique a guy you have to be to steal the headlines from a battle between a couple of heavyweight legends? Do you know how rare and unique a guy you have to be to come back after 3 years off and fight a former champion in Anthony Pettis? Do you know how rare and unique you have to be to even accept that fight? Do you know how rare and how unique a guy you have to be to actually win that fight? And finally, do you know how rare and unique a guy you have to be to look that good doing it after that much time off against that guy in the cage? I mean, that was astonishing. Astonishing, but not surprising, if you know what I mean. And if you know anything about Nate Diaz. And if you do know anything about Nate Diaz, you know there's only one Nate Diaz. There has never been anybody like him before. There never will be anybody like him going forward. After all, this is a guy who was interviewed in an airport back in the day about his game plan for fighting Conor McGregor. When Conor McGregor was the biggest thing in the world. And Nate said the game plan was really very simple.
What is the game plan going in against him?
The game plan is you go in there, hit him with some good don't get hit, and come home with a pocket full of cash.
The game plan is to go in there, hit him with some good bleep, don't get hit, and come home with a pocket full of cash. I mean, still to this day, one of my favorite quotes by an athlete ever. Again. The game plan is to go in there, hit him with some good bleep, don't get hit, and come home with a pocket full of cash. I mean, shouldn't that be the game plan for every fight ever? Go in there, hit him with some good bleep, don't get hit, and come home with a pocket full of cash. I mean, hell, I could train fighters. I could train any fighter, any gladiator. Hey, listen. What do you know, Rome? I'll tell you what I know. I got your game plan. I got your game plan right here. Oh, really? What do you know about the fight game? I know this. Here's your game plan. You go in there, hit him with some good bleep, don't get hit, and come home with a pocket full of cash. Yeah, that's a good idea. It's good, Rome. Tell me that one more time. The game plan is to go in there, hit him with some good bleep, don't get hit, and come home with a pocket full of cash. Best part about that, that's exactly what he did. And it was beautiful. Too beautiful. And for too long, it felt like that might be one of the last memories we would have of Nate. Because Nate did not step into a cage for 3 years. Nobody takes 3 years between fights and shows up without rust. Nobody except Nate Diaz. He showed up Saturday night, and not only did he not look like he had any rust, he actually looked better. He got in there against Pettis and went... Talking about a guy who beat Conor McGregor. And yet Saturday, he looked as good as he ever looked. My favorite part of that three-round fight is when he got in front of Pettis and gave him the... And he did so after 3 years of inactivity. How the hell is that even possible? You know how hard it is to go 3 years between fights and then come back high level against a guy like that and give him the... All right, I'm going to stop doing that. I don't want to lose track of the actual take here. Like, years ago, Dana White famously said that Nate Diaz wasn't a, quote, needle mover. I mean, it was a pretty tough take at the time. But I understand why Dana said it at the time, that Diaz was not a needle mover. Saturday night, Dana said, quote, it's pretty hard to deny now. He's a needle mover. End quote. I'd add one thing to that. He's a needle mover and... Man, my man sure as hell does move the needle. He dominated Anthony Pettis. Came near finishing, damn close to finishing Pettis. And that was a thorough and complete imposing of Nate's will on Pettis. And every time Pettis came close to getting going and taking over, Nate had an answer for him every single time. It was so impressive, so dominant, and it came after such a long layoff. Just Nate Diaz doing Nate Diaz things in the cage during the fight. And then Nate Diaz saying Nate Diaz things right after the fight.
What was it like being away, and what is it like to be back and get a nice victory like that over Anthony Pettis?
It's Nick Diaz army. I feel good to be back.
So, do you think you will be back permanently now? You took a nice long layoff of 3 years off. After this great fight and having this great victory, do you think we'll be seeing you fighting regularly now?
The reason I was off is because everybody sucked. There's nobody to fight. But with this belt, I want to defend it against Jorge Masvidal. Had a good last fight. Good last fight. All respect to the man, but there ain't no gangsters in this game anymore. There ain't nobody who does it right but me and him. So I know my man's a gangster, but he ain't no West Coast gangster. You know what I'm saying?
Such an amazing Q&A. I mean, what's the best part of that interview? Answer, all of it. He started off with a shout out to the Nate Diaz Army mother bleepers. And the reason he was asked, why were you out for so long? Or actually, he just responded and said why he was out for so long. Quote, the reason I was off was because everybody sucked.
The reason I was off is because everybody sucked.
And there was nobody to fight. Like, why would I come back to fight if everybody sucks? And then there was him calling out Jorge Masvidal. And what about that call out? Like, Nate has an issue with other fighters who don't seek out the toughest fights. To hear him tell it, he's been sitting around waiting for an opponent who didn't suck. He found it, then he showed up, and he beat him. And now he needs another opponent who doesn't suck. Problem is, according to Nate, there just aren't enough of those guys out there.
I don't think anybody knows how to do it. Everybody's beginner. They're also scared or something. But like I said, I don't want to be all fooling myself and riding on a high horse and cocky and shit, but I got way too much money to be having to fight somebody that's not interesting.
It's amazing. Quote, I don't think they know how to do it. They're scared or something. But like I said, I don't want to sound all fool myself in riding around on a high horse and talking bleep. But I've got way too much money to be fighting somebody who's not interesting. It's an amazing take. Like, I don't need this. And not only do I not need it because I've got all my money, I'm not interested in this. So what does the guy do next? He's fought at lightweight. He's fought at welterweight. So what belt would he fight for next? None of the above. He's not fighting for the lightweight belt. He's not fighting for the welterweight belt. He's fighting for the baddest mother bleeper in the game belt. And in his mind, that strap currently belongs to him.
So I'm in the best martial artist in the world, not like some hold on to you wrestlers who are going to hold you and hopefully win a round and find a loophole to win any fights and put belts on their waist. Now we're fighting for the baddest motherfucker in the game, belt, and that's mine. So I'd like to defend it against Jorge Masvidal. So if you want to be the baddest motherfucker, that's how we're going to do it.
Now you see why everybody loves this guy, or why so many people love this guy. Not only for what he says, but he backs it up. Not only does he say things like that, and nobody says things like that, he could take 3 years off and come back and fight the way he did and look as good as he's ever looked after 3 years off. The baddest mother bleeper belt currently resides in Stockton. And the only way you're going to get it is if you show up and beat his ass for it. In other words, Nate Diaz, needle mover, the baddest mother bleeper, and a true original. All hail the champ and holder of the baddest mother bleeper belt. The only belt that really matters. And right now, it is around Nate Diaz's waist. And if you want to take that from him, you'll probably have to kill him to get it. Because I think that's the one guy who probably is willing to die to keep that belt. The most important belt. The baddest mother bleeper in the world belt. And I love the guy that he called out. Masvidal. Not for any hate. In fact, like respect. Like this is one of the only guys that interests me. And notice he didn't come out and say, hey man, where's Conor? Get me Conor McGregor. I want that money fight. He doesn't want that. He already has his money. He wants the baddest mother bleeper. Nate Diaz. This is amazing. All right, so what are your thoughts? Did you see it? What did you think of his act? Is he back now? And I love Dana White saying, hey, make no mistake about it. This guy is a needle mover. He is a needle mover. You know why? Rare is the guy who can, like Nate. God, I thought it was so awesome. Only on a night like that where you have this amazing fight between Cormier and Stipe could I lead the whole recap by talking about Nate. All right, we'll come back. What do you want to hit on? BMW championships were really something. I may find a way to jam some golf in here. I do want to talk about DC and what happened to Daniel Cormier. All of that still ahead. 1-800-636-8686. You are in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Open phone still ahead.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Back. I said most things do not live up to the hype. UFC 241 did. So much so that I could do an entire half hour on that. And I might, unless I see a really good phone call to interrupt the thought with 1-800-636-8686. All right, so I mentioned Nate Diaz. You can tell I've got a pretty healthy respect for Nate Diaz. And the fact that he is currently rocking the baddest mother bleeper belt in the world. And if you want that belt, you got to go to Stockton. And you got to take it off of Nate. Have fun with that. All right, so more on that fight card. Because, again, going into the fight, we had Daniel Cormier on the show. We had Dana White on the show. We talked a lot about that fight card. And it lived up to the hype. It was a great night. And once again, you know I do not root. Not for any team, not for any player. Not for any coach, not for any owner, not for any manager. I just don't. I don't root for anything other than something to talk about. That said, I have to admit, it's very hard for me not to root for Daniel Cormier. Cormier is one of the best to ever step into the octagon. Cormier is one of the best guys ever to step into the octagon. One of the best human beings to ever do it. So if I'm going to be real and I'm going to be transparent, I have to admit, I was hoping for a good result for Cormier Saturday night in Anaheim against Stipe. And nothing against Stipe, who I like quite a bit too. And respect quite a bit. But DC's DC. He's just different. That's just a different dude for all the right reasons. So I got to admit, part of me was hoping for a good result for Daniel Cormier. And for three rounds, it looked like we were going to get a very good result for Daniel Cormier. Cormier, who knocked Miocic out over a year ago, was having his way early on. And he was having his way with the bigger man. Landing at will, hammering away at Stipe's face. Well, that's not necessarily DC's game or his best asset. It was working and working well until it didn't. And DC's own corner saw it coming and pleaded with him to not take any unnecessary chances and to just do what he does best, to do what they trained him to do. They didn't want him standing in front of the guy who many thought was the best heavyweight in the world or the best heavyweight ever. You know, do what you do, DC. Take the fight to the mat, finish this guy, and let's get the hell out of here. But DC, and he admitted as much after the fight, was not listening to his corner. Did not do what he had trained to do. He said all this. This is not me. DC admitted as much after the fight. And the reason he was not doing what he was trained to do, and the reason he was not listening to his corner, was because he was having too much success and too much fun turning Stipe's face into hamburger meat. And then the fourth round started. And it was clear that Cormier was not going to deviate from his own game plan. Problem for him, Stipe made a huge adjustment between the third and the fourth round. And he started to dig into DC's body, started to pound away with vicious body shots, which of course opened everything else up. Next thing you know, Stipe is running Greg Williams' old New Orleans Saints playbook and was looking to, quote, affect the head.
Affect the head.
He was able to affect the head because he had gone to the body so effectively, so many times. And then he started to affect the head.
Kill the head, the body will die.
And then he did, repeatedly, before finishing off a shocked and disappointed Daniel Cormier. And then again, proving once again why he's one of the most beloved fighters ever. And to stand up an athlete as you're ever going to see, Cormier owned every last bit of it after the fight. Cormier admitted he fell in love with the striking. He fell in love with punching the other guy in the face. He fell in love with seeing the damage he was doing to Stipe's face. And that he didn't listen to what his people were telling him to do. He didn't do what he had trained to do, and in the end, it got him beat.
That's probably the biggest letdown is how I let my coaches down. They were begging me to wrestle. And that's probably the most disappointing thing is that I didn't do... what I was trained to do, and I feel like I let my coaches down, let them down. When you start finding success and landing things, you just kind of fall in love with it. You know, I feel it feels like the Gustafson fight all over again when I wrestled a lot in the first round, and then for the last four rounds, I just didn't, and they were begging me to do it then. But tonight, I actually paid the ultimate price for not listening to my coaches. I'm usually pretty good about doing that.
And when have you ever heard an athlete, a high-level athlete, a world champion, own a defeat like that and say it's 100% on me? Well, credit to the guy who did it to me, but it's all on me. I did not do what I was trained to do. I did not do what we trained to do. I did not follow the game plan. I did not listen to the guys in my corner. I mean, hard to imagine a great champion like that making that big of a tactical mistake. But in the moment, he didn't want to just beat Stipe. He didn't want to choke him out. He wanted to beat him up. He wanted to beat him down and knock him the hell out. And that decision cost him the fight and his belt. And it was a huge mistake. And nobody knows that better than DC. This question now is, if you're DC and you lose that fight like that, where do you go from here? Obviously, he was not going to make a snap decision after the fight while it was still so raw and so painful. But he did come on this show before the fight and admit that it could be his last fight in the octagon. He said that on this show prior to the fight, that his legacy and his faculties were still intact, and that it might be the last time we see him in the octagon. Is there a possibility, Daniel, that Saturday night might be the last time fans see you in the cage?
Yeah, it very well could be, Jim. You know, like, I know that when I'm in there, I hopefully can fight to my potential and get the job done. But if anything shows itself that I'm not able to compete at the level that I was before, I'll walk away. You know, I like I said, man, I'm not going to stick around and really start to negatively affect my legacy and my reputation for being a champion. So if I can't compete to the best of my ability and I feel something different as I exit that octagon, win or lose, I will it could be the last time you see me in there.
All right, so I don't know. I can't speak for him. I can only speak for what I saw, my own opinion. He hadn't lost anything. He might be 40. He had lost nothing. He looked as good as he's ever looked. I thought he looked great. He absolutely can still fight at that same high level. But it was the tactical mistakes that I think that he made that cost him the fight, not because he can no longer do what he used to do. I didn't see any slippage or any diminishment of skills, but it wasn't a loss. So how does that loss affect his decision-making going forward? He said he would talk it over with his family, talk it over with his coaches, and then he'd go from there. He didn't say he would talk it over with me. Didn't ask for my opinion, but he's going to get it anyway. Look, I've never been one to point to somebody else's legacy and talk about whether or not they're jacking it up or how they're impacting, how they're going to be remembered. I mean, who am I or who are you to say anything about somebody else's legacy? It's their freaking legacy. They can do whatever the hell they want with it. I really don't care. So I'm not going to sit here and say what an athlete should or should not do based on their legacy, because it's their legacy. It's not yours. It's not mine. It's not anybody else's. Do whatever the hell you want with your legacy. Now, if DC is taking his legacy into account when making that decision and wonders how that loss is going to impact his legacy, I'm here to say that that loss does not in any way ding him or his legacy. He's 40. He's lost nothing skill-wise. He was winning the fight handily on all three cards after three rounds. He's still an elite fighter. Had he listened to his corner, he might still be the champ. So this is not a case of a guy staying around too long. This is not a case of a guy needing the money and staying around and being a shot fighter and killing his legacy. He's not that. He looked great for most of the fight. Point being, if this guy wants to retire, his legacy is still intact. He still will go down as one of the all-time greats. In fact, if I were a friend or family and he would ask me my opinion, I would say he should retire. He's got his health. He set himself up beautifully for a life outside the cage. And unlike so many others, he's got so many other things that he can do. He doesn't have to fight. He should retire. And if he does, he goes out, is one of the best to ever do it, and certainly one of the most beloved guys to ever do it. Hey, but don't take my word for it. Listen to what Dana White told us on this show prior to the fight.
I respect this guy so much. You don't ever hear any complaining, no crying. I didn't want this fight. He just goes out and does what he does. He just, I dread the day he leaves. I dread it. I dread the day Daniel Cormier leaves. So he's still going to be my commentator and doing things with us. But as a fight fan and as a fan of Cormier, I dread the day.
So my take is I would like to see him retire. I think he should. The only caveat here is if he does not want to go out on a loss, if he wants to go out on his own terms, if he wants one more shot against Stipe, or he has one more shot, wants one more shot against John Jones. If he feels really strongly that he has unfinished business, I'm good with that too. I'd understand that. Personally, I don't think he has anything to prove. Personally, I don't need to see it. Personally, I don't think he needs to do it. But if he feels deep down that he's got unfinished business and he has to do it, go ahead, DC. I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I'm all about it. I just think the guy is set up. He's got an amazing life. Like, why risk that? Why risk anything like that? For who? For what? I'd hate to see his career end on a loss, but I don't think any less of him after that loss. In fact, I actually think even more of him if he accepts it, owns it, and just keeps moving. What do you think? What do you think he'll do? What do you think he should do? What do you think about that fight? And he could not have handled that loss any better. It had to be the most bitterly disappointing thing that doesn't include losing to John Jones, which we know is the most bitter thing of all for him. But to be a stand-up and own that thing the way he did, only DC. Only DC gives that interview after that loss. All right, there you go. Half hour on UFC 241. I thought the event was that good. Thought it warranted that. Talk a little bit of golf when we come back. Still looking for a phone call that makes this thing better. Notice I didn't say a phone call. There are phone calls. There are people on hold. No offense if you're on hold. But I'm looking for a call to make it better. If not, I'm going to roll into my thoughts on the BMW Championships. Some good things there, too. First up, here is a... Led the show way back when with the Antonio Brown update. It seemed like everything was fine. He was there pregame for the matchup with the Cardinals, there for the walkthrough on Saturday, not there yesterday. And apparently it was because of his helmet. Adam Schefter reported earlier that he was at practice today, per a source. Schefter tweeted, quote, Antonio Brown was at the facility this morning and in attendance at the team meeting. The walkthrough practice was canceled, but Brown is back for now. What's he going to do? And as I mentioned, I could even make the argument that he may have a grievance again, that the second grievance may actually, in fact, be better than the first. But I can't because, I mean, I can, but I won't. Because I just don't give a damn. Because of all the ticky-tack stupid things that have happened leading up to this. It's just hard for me to take him seriously as a crusader. A crusader against what? Safer helmets? You know, one of only 2,000 guys in the NFL who is fighting this? Oh, no way. He's back? Right. He's back. I think he finally realized that, no, wait a minute. Like, I don't have a point here. They won't pay me if I don't come back. I can't just decide not to play. I thought you said my money was guaranteed. No, not guaranteed. Guaranteed unless you stop coming to work over something that was negotiated by our own union and the league. Wait, guaranteed's guaranteed, right? Well, not really. No. Oh. All right, so, like, do you think we can paint the helmet silver and black? Like, not me, but can I get somebody to paint it? And then they won't know. No, they'll know. They'll know. Yeah, but how about that newer version of that helmet? That's good, right? No. No, they did not certify that helmet. Well, how about we find another one? Nah, it's pretty clear they're not going to do it, AB. So I have to come to work. Right. And wear the same helmets as everybody else. Right. If you want your 30 mil. So he's back. This time we'll see for how long. So that's the latest there, 1-800-636-8686. All right, so the 2019 PGA Tour season is now 4 days at East Lake away from being over. And for the last 2 weeks, the FedEx Cup playoffs have whittled a field of 125 down to 30. And whichever stick wins the Tour Championship in the ATL next Sunday is not just getting some gaudy piece of hardware, but a cool 15 mil to go with it. So you want to keep the attention of the best players in the world after the major season? Dangle 15 mil over the flagstick on 18 at East Lake. But in order to get from 125 to 1, we had to first cut from 70 to 30. And that's what happened over the weekend at the BMW Championship in Medina. They say the penultimate episode of a TV series is always better than the finale. Well, that might be the case also on tour, because it's going to be hard to top what just went down in Chicago, because Justin Thomas lit that track on fire. Thunder and lightning hit Hefty's hotel. And Brooks Koepka lit a troll on fire. And it all happened in the same week. And as badly as I want to start with JT, I just can't get away from Brooks. So many of you hate this guy, and I guess on some level I kind of get it. I mean, easy not to like a dude who looks like an athlete, wins all the time, has four majors already, gives out free beer, and holds slow players accountable for killing the game. Sounds like one of the worst guys ever. Screw that guy. Give me J.B. Holmes standing over an eight-footer for 10 minutes that he'll probably miss. Well, apparently, some egg on Twitter is sick of Brooks as well. And after BK fired a 71 Friday, some jackwagon named Leon Rosen tweeted at Brooks, quote, "Why are you playing if you don't care if you win or lose? Are you too tired at 29 to make the effort? People like me bet on you to win, or at least really try. You walk around like a dead man, not caring about your game. Be honest. Stop playing and go drive a truck." End of tweet. Some serious Twitter fire from that egg. Amazing if somebody on Twitter thinks a guy who has won four majors and finished top six in all of them this year doesn't care if he wins or loses. Even more amazing that this idiot brought his own gambling into it, of course. As if Brooks hasn't gotten a lot of people paid in the last 24 months. But Brooks didn't bother addressing any of that and just focused on the last line about the suggestion that he should just go drive a truck instead. And in just two words, Koepka proved Billy Shakes correct in that brevity is indeed the highest form of wit when he wrote back on Twitter, and I quote, "Brinks truck? Straight delete your tweet, fire. Why don't you go drive a truck? Brinks truck? Brinks truck Koepka if you need him. The dude who leads the tour on the money list this year and has made $20 million in tournament earnings alone since 2017, just slammed that Brinks truck in reverse and backed up all over poor little Leon, who has since deleted his tweet. Way to stand by that and own it, egg. Anybody still want to call Brooks Koepka boring or bad for the game? Man, do so at your own risk. I love this guy. This isn't some Q school hack trading with Twitter trolls. It's the best player in the world doing it, and I'm here for it. Brooks will be at East Lake next week competing for the FedEx Cup and 15 more mil to add to the back of his Brinks truck. Leon will be somewhere on the internet scrubbing his tweets. Scoreboard, Leon, look up at it. Then you got JT, jungle favorite, despite being team creamy peanut butter over the far superior team crunchy. This is a guy who was saddled with a nagging wrist injury that kept him on the shelf for a few tournaments. Well, that was then, and this is now, because JT didn't just blitz the field and win by three strokes yesterday. He also set the course record at Medina twice in the same week. Fired a 65 on Thursday to take the first round lead, then went four shots better on Saturday with a blistering 61. Eight birdies, two eagles, and a cruise control 68 on Sunday to win his 10th tournament and take the points lead into the season finale this week. That win yesterday was his 10th on tour. And at the age of 26, he's already had the career of Justin Rose and Sergio Garcia with double-digit tour victories and a major to go along with it. And now he's just one of 14 active players with 10 wins under his belt. The guy used to pay property tax in Jordan Spieth's shadow and is now so far out of it that Jordan wishes he was JT. And the next week at East Lake, he'll start that tournament under the new format at 10 under par with everybody else chasing him. And if he converts on the cup, he'll become just the second two-time winner to join the Cat, the Big Cat, as the only other guy to accomplish that. Not bad for a dude who was pretty much forgotten earlier this year. Lesson learned at the BMW. Never come at Brooks on Twitter and never kick dirt on Justin Thomas. Don't do it. Brooks Koepka, you're still going to tell me how boring this guy is? How bad he is for the game? Let's quickly go to the phones. Yeah, what the hell? Let's go to Maine. Christian in Maine. Hey, Christian, what's up?
Hey, Romy. Thanks for the vine. I heard, is he doing research and development?
No.
You don't like that car.
I don't like that car. Not a very good car.
Did he say Dildo Nation or Bilbo? Run that back, Alvin. I need to hear that. You might have been a little quick on the trigger there, Alvy. Of course, Christian, to be fair, your reputation does precede itself. That's why Alvin was hovering over the hammer. You might be talking about those, quote, sex toys that are thrown in the end zone in Buffalo. Alvin's listening back to make sure. Either way, Christian, your delivery was a little bit off today. You sounded a little bit off. Anyway, there's got to be a ATP here. Here we go. Jimmers, you asked Hawk what kind of a player he was playing on Tinder for tennis. I know you used to be a player, so what kind of a player were you back in the day? How long has it been since you last played? Braden in Burlington. You know, pretty good player. Not college good, but tournament good in Southern California. You know, varsity on a high school team. There was a CIF champion, but like low-level varsity. Like, you know, good. Good. I think I just hit the dump button 5 times. Oh, anyway, pretty good. I haven't played since one vacation with the fam. But prior to that, I didn't play since that celebrity event at UC Santa Barbara where I was the so-called celebrity. And I played with I played doubles with a woman on the UCSB women's team. And I was tired and I mishit my serve and it hit her in the side of the head. And she was bleeding from her ear and she went down like she was hit by a Scud missile. So I didn't play ever again. Dell Small Business Technology Advisors offers advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions. Like computers with Intel Core processors, call an advisor today at 877-BY-DELL. My thanks to Dino Babers, Anthony Lynn, Jason LaCanfora,